Hi, I'm Ken.
And I'm Dee.
And this is Antiques Freaks.
Top podcast, CDC approved.
Long distance, socially responsible podcast.
The CDC did not approve us, but I like to imagine that they would, because they know we've been good kids.
I feel like they would approve of our methodology of recording from across town.
Yeah, I think they would like that.
This week, we're going to be talking about Etsy.
Etsy. It sucks? No. Otherwise, we wouldn't know an entire episode about it.
I was going to say my number one source for jade at least 3 times a year.
Yeah, I'm being mean because I run an Etsy, and it every now and again it puts me through my paces, and they sure do like to try their sellers by just pulling stunts, but so far it's still, I would say, a better platform for buying than eBay.
Agreed. Especially when it comes to antiques.
Especially when it comes to antiques.
Now, Dee, as the creator, owner, manager, and handler of our podcast Etsy account, how did you get started?
Well, Etsy actually has fairly reasonable onboarding, like an automated onboarding process. So when I realized that it would make me literally throw myself out of every available window in the city to try and sell things on eBay, I went to Etsy and I just kind of clicked open a store. And like I said, it's got an automated onboarding process. It was easier when I started. As I understand, it's a little more difficult, but it is still pretty much just a multiple choice questions kind of thing. After the usual, you put in your shop name, give it a little custom URL. You will be asked to input a payment method. I actually have an entire separate checking account that I use for this, which I recommend so that you do not have your finances tied to a corruptible source.
Very smart.
And they do this because Etsy does incur fees. I consider them negligible fees. They do not bother me yet. They do keep going up, and I get the feeling that eventually we're going to reach a point where the fees do bother me. But hey, much like eBay, the fees are based on the amount that the product is worth and is being listed at.
So the fee is a percentage of the price that the customer pays?
Yeah. For most people, it's going to be about like 35 cents plus, I think the listing fees are... Yeah, the listing fees for my printfuls are 19 cents a month, so it's not bad.
That's pretty good. Now, the thing that's always blocked me from making an Etsy is, one, I have nothing to sell, but two, you have to come up with a shop name right away, and it has to be a name that you're going to want to work with for the rest of your career.
Absolutely. I think that stalls a lot of people out. I think, and sometimes by the time you come up with a good name, it's been taken. I was extremely lucky. Obviously, I had intended to link this shop to the podcast, so that was a no-brainer, and I was very lucky that it was available.
Extremely lucky.
Yeah, extremely lucky, extremely convenient. I would say 99% of people do not have that convenience. I have met a lot of artists that are frustrated that they have somehow tied themselves to a brand name by accident, by naming their Etsy something at the time that felt right, but went on when their career changed. I'm talking about Casey.
If, for example, you start your Etsy career in leatherworking, but then transfer to ink work and illustration.
Yeah.
Or if you start your Etsy career in jewelry, but then move on to general antiques.
Yeah, that's going to be, I guess that's tough to tackle. I guess I would just suggest, imagine that you're going to give yourself a fancy schmancy studio name, and that might work better for you.
A shop name not necessarily specific to the items you sell, but that is specific to you as a personal brand.
Yeah, like Hive Mind Galactic.
So, for example, Jim's House of Extremely Reasonably Priced Goods That You Should Buy, rather than Jim's House of Jewelry.
First of all, can we just get out of the way? I would 100% shop at Jim's House of Extremely Reasonably Priced Products That I Should Buy. I know I'm disappointed that we named the fucking shop after the podcast, because it could have been Ken and D's House of Extremely Reasonably Priced Products.
Brand synergy bites us in the ass again.
Brand synergy is really bad for making off-the-cuff jokes. Okay, so I was curious, and it turns out that since we've both begun this, Etsy does let you change your shop name.
Oh, see, that is new, because when I made my attempt, they informed me that it was my name forever, and I was like, nope.
Yes, same. Etsy changes pretty fast. So I guess tip number two here is keep up with the news on Etsy.
Check the site updates.
But yeah, it looks like now if your shop is not active, you can change the name however many times you want. If your shop is active, you can change it up to 5 times. After that, you will need to submit a formal request to Etsy support.
Now, what is the difference between active and inactive? Is it the difference between having stuffs listed and sold and not having that?
Not necessarily. It's actually just, actually, yes. Let's just call it that. You can have an active shop without things listed, though.
Okay.
I think it's the difference between having your doors open and having them closed on a brick and mortar store.
I see.
So yeah, so when you start the shop on Etsy, it is not activated. This is where you will be pretty much plugging in all your info, and ideally your first couple of listings will be all while the shop is inactive, and then once everything is set and formalized, you will activate it.
Sounds good.
So great news, you actually can change your shop name. Unfortunately, you can't change your branding once people have already come to know you as something, so tread carefully.
Now, speaking of listings, what are some common pitfalls that Etsy listings may fall into?
All right, so the first thing I'm going to warn you about is keywords. These are really important.
One might even say they are key.
One of Etsy's biggest pitfalls is that you can't, like, mass upload pictures. You can upload up to 10 photos. They actually do have a pretty useful little, like, chart here of what kind of photos you should give, which is 4 different angles, a detail shot, in use, a scale shot. And Etsy itself actually suggests styling a scene where the object might be used to give your consumers an idea of how they might use your product. This is cynical, but a lot of people need that before they buy anything.
And also, I feel like a lot of people need that advice before they take a photograph to not just throw the vintage t-shirt they're selling on top of their laundry pile, photograph that in zero lighting, and then upload it.
Yep, that's gonna get you.
Maybe put it on a hanger, or wear it yourself and take a photo in a mirror.
Ideally, if I'm purchasing an object, I want to see both. If it's a t-shirt, I want to see it on a hanger, front back. I want to see it on your body, front back. Unless it doesn't fit you, and then it's fine. You can come up with some other creative things, like stuff a pillow in it to see how it, like, stuffing a pillow in it is probably my go-to for fleshing out a t-shirt that I can't wear myself, you know? So yeah, the styled scene is, say, like, a great driver of sales. I will also admit I have never done it, because between us, the photos part is what stymies me the most, because lighting is so goddamned important.
Lighting is everything in photography.
It is everything. I actually do have a ring light.
Oh, well, there you go.
Well, it's on the way. I don't have it yet. If you got the spare dosh, a little selfie ring light that attaches to your phone, it can be a godsend for smaller items. If you shop in, like, discount sites, which does include eBay, you can actually get, like, pop-up photo boxes pretty cheap, also for smaller items. I work with, can you tell, I primarily work with smaller items.
I feel like that segues into another Etsy tip, which is, it's better for smaller items, because you're going to be shipping all of this.
Hey, yeah, every time you think this is going to be great on Etsy, I want you to imagine, all right, you're in Savers, you just found a big, like, 20 by 24 painting, and you're like, perfect for my Etsy. Now I want you to sit down in the middle of that Savers, and I want you to close your eyes, and I want you to imagine yourself wrapping it, bubble wrapping it. Better bubble wrap it like 6 or 7 times, because it's fragile.
And good luck finding a box to fit it.
Yeah, you're going to have to construct a box to fit it. You're going to have to argue with the USPS people. You shouldn't, because they're correct. Because they do have limits on dimensions of what they can ship. You're going to have to go to UPS instead. They're going to charge you easily $30 more. I don't even care what your baseline price was. I think $30 more is actually their standard increase from USPS. So yeah, I want you to do that, all of that. And then you can put it down, because you don't want to ship it. All you have to do is take a look at the prepaid, the flat rate boxes.
Oh.
Yeah, if it can't fit in a flat rate box, then I don't want it. And this actually counts, because the flat rate boxes I actually do not use too often unless it is incredibly heavy. Actually, speaking of Casey, I think she actually had a cast iron thing sent to her at a flat rate price, because they do offer that rate for whatever fits in the box, regardless of how heavy it is. So yeah, utilize the power of flat rate boxes. I'm going to piggyback on the smaller objects thing, because packaging is something you're going to have to think about. Maybe limit the glass and porcelain object and other breakables that you are thinking of selling. I'm not saying don't do it, but I take a really serious look about whether or not you want to get involved in this, because it is going to be a matter of when and not if something arrives to someone broken. It's not anyone's fault, it just happens. Keep in mind, if you're willing to handle that, that's going to be a whole return process. Hopefully it won't turn into negative feedback. You have to be incredibly pleasant for that not to happen. And also, you're going to have to learn some really specific packaging techniques to keep things from breaking in transit.
Now, you could break the bank on bubble wrap, or you can make use of empty plastic grocery bags and newspapers.
Empty plastic grocery bags and newspapers are fantastic. It's also like quality of glass, because a mug obviously will probably be just fine with a lot of grocery bags and papers. A teacup, however, you're gonna want the bubble wrap.
It is exceptionally delicate.
Obviously, if you have access to like custom foam cutting, I don't know why you're selling on Etsy if you can afford that. I do actually know a couple, there's some people who do sell in such volume that they do have access to custom foam cutting, but they are selling high ticket items all the time. Fiestaware and teacups particularly.
Which is not us.
That's not us, and I'm willing to bet it's probably not you, because you wouldn't be listening to this episode if you had that on lock. So, you know, I do actually feel really strongly about repurposing shipping foam. It's pretty easy. I actually have a foam cutter. They're like $6 at Michael's. I use it for other things, but you can also just take leftover shipping foam and kind of cut it into shapes that will make it easier to pack something. Since you can't cut it to fit exactly, it's mostly just good for keeping things from moving around in the box. So you can actually get a lot of mileage out of reusing packing materials of stuff that you had sent to you.
Recycling.
Recycling. It's fun. It's great. It's amazing. If you've got like a bulk store, a bulk goods store like a Sam's Club or a BJ's, I think they always have free boxes.
Oh, if you just ask them if they have any empty cardboard boxes you can have?
Yeah, the caveat is that they're very rarely useful boxes, but they are there sometimes, so whenever I'm there, I do ask.
Handy.
Usually they have shelf display boxes, which aren't awesome.
But they are boxes.
They are boxes, so that's a really great, cheap, easy way. Again, this is like sort of like a probably country-locked thing, but you got those dollar stores that are actually dollar stores. I get a lot of shipping material from there. It's a Dollar Tree in my region. I don't even know if those are the rest of the country, honestly. Can you tell I don't get out much? But yeah, discount shops usually have stuff, even if it's just like rolls of paper. I get a lot of bubble mailers from the dollar shops, which is great. Especially if you're selling things like jewelry, little tiny things, bubble mailers are more than enough to keep yourself stuff safe.
Sounds good. What are some things you wish you had known before you started selling on Etsy?
Oh, that's a good question. I wish I'd known search engine optimization, because Etsy relies on it more than like even other websites.
Oh.
I wish earlier someone had told me about a third-party printing and printing on demand.
That would be very handy.
Yeah, for a small company, I use Printful. As far as I can tell, they are still really the only skin in the game, as it were. At least the only one worth talking about. I explored two others that I won't mention because their prices were astronomical. Printful does allow you to take you can set the profit margin however you want. Their prices are pretty much wholesale standard, and you can control the markup from there. It's incredibly handy, especially since if you don't have the overhead like I don't for ordering like a large inventory of products because you don't know if they're going to sell, then it's really great. And of course, since it's on demand, you can switch over if you do find yourself fully successful and the third party isn't cost effective anymore. You can always just very easily swap to wholesale ordering instead. I think it's just really important to pivot to like what your needs are. Of course, that only works for things that you can print on. I think that's less useful for like vintage goods, but I think you should also have a logo and sell stickers to people because it's a fun way to advertise.
Speaking of logos, the Etsy shop will require one.
Etsy shop will require one.
And if you are not a graphic designer yourself, I highly recommend hiring one.
Just suck it up and hire the graphic designer. Ken and I are both going to stake our reputations on that. You will not regret it. Sorry for looping into that, Ken, but I felt like you'd agree.
Yes.
It makes you feel good. It makes you feel professional.
It makes you look professional.
It's invigorating on every aspect it could be invigorating, including sales. Biggest thing, absolutely biggest thing, make it very clear what your handling time is.
The lag time between purchase of item and reception of item.
Thank you. Shipping is the biggest sticky wicket in the game. Obviously, more than anything, open communication is incredibly important, and most small-time dealers who do Etsy have a set day they go to the post office, then this does not change. I find it very helpful to set a realistic handling time and also publish large, bold, big letters what your shipping day is if you have one. of course, you don't like have to have one, but I find it incredibly convenient if you're not dealing with high sales volume to just have a day you get all of your sales together and ship them out. And again, I actually really recommend that even if you have it everywhere on your bio in every item description, if you actually have the time to send everyone a little message what your next shipping date is so that they know when to expect it to be marked shipped, that's great. Communication is huge with your customers, or they get antsy and then they hate you. And just, you know, you can be honest, if you get the flu and you're out for 2 weeks, just say, I can't do it, I've got the flu. I don't think there's a lot of people who would, like, flip out on you for openly telling them when to expect it. I think it's also very helpful to retain open communication about, like, special orders and stuff. I've never had to deal with that myself, but if you want to pretty much look like Superman, you can always work with people for things like next day shipping, you know, at their cost and things like that. That will really give you a great reputation if you can provide that kind of extra attention.
Absolutely.
For example, in our store right now, I have disabled international shipping because there isn't a good way to set the prices. My entire international shipping process is doing quotes on an individual basis via messages. And it makes people feel good. Like, it'll help you because you are not shortchanging yourself on shipping costs. And it makes people feel like you're paying attention to them, which is all most people want, really.
That's true.
Like I said, if you've got your eyes on becoming, like, the big Etsy person, like Captain Etsy who sells all the time on Etsy, really pay attention to the service terms, because I know recently they did a thing where they will automatically promote items from people with certain amounts of viewers or sales, and then charge you for the advertising against your will. And this doesn't affect me in the slightest, of course, because I do not have that many viewers or sales or anything, but if that is your goal, if that is what you are aspiring to, then that's going to become an issue later on. Another thing to know about Etsy: take the taxes seriously. Etsy is real about the taxes. Again, this doesn't apply to me because in my state, I have not gone over the tax threshold before I have to report. I actually cannot say for certain that that is actually even the case in all states, that there is a threshold. I believe that in most of them that is the case, but it is also different in every state. So what I mean by that is that you do not have to report the income from Etsy until you have made a certain amount of money for the year, for the tax year, as it were. So just keep an eye on that. It's as easy as if you know how to use a spreadsheet program, keeping a spreadsheet of your sales that will automatically tally how much you've made to date. That is what I choose to do. If you want, you can go even more analog. You can just keep a notebook where you can add it up and make sure that you haven't gone over. Etsy does have automated tax document preparation if you need it, if you do get to that point, which is handy, and I can't say anything past that because I cheat and I hire a tax prepper, so don't actually get into the nitty-gritty of the process too much anymore.
I feel like that's more standard practice than it is cheating.
When I started doing it, people responded so strangely, like, why would you waste the money? And I'm like, have you tried to do taxes? And they're like, yeah, I hate it. Like, exactly. So yeah, my hot tip is just hire someone to do your taxes for you. But again, don't sleep on this. You can get in serious trouble if you try to get around paying your state taxes through Etsy.
So don't do it.
Unless you're, what is it, New Hampshire, where they just do not do sales taxes, and then you're fucking golden.
Yeah, but they get you with the land tax.
They get you with that property tax.
I want to actually circle back around to photos, because part of the reason I don't take more photos for the internet is because I did not think camera first when I purchased my phone. So, as the youth say, all of my photographs look like they were taken on a potato.
Potato photos are a problem.
They will be gritty, they will have poor lighting, they will not accurately reflect the item's colors, and they will not help your item sell.
And that's going to be tough if you're not looking to buy a phone anytime soon.
But you may be able to pick up a good camera if you haunt the Facebook Marketplace or Craigslist for people who are trying to offload their very good, but not quite what they're looking for, cameras.
There you go. That was going to be my suggestion. Yeah, and honestly, all you really need is decent base model digital camera will already get you farther than a bad phone camera. I've also actually seen lens kits for smartphones. That might be something to look into.
Ooh.
I don't know how useful they are for just making your photos look less potato, since I'm mostly familiar with using them for macro photography, but I have actually just seen attachments that are trying to make your camera suck less. So you could look into that. I think it's actually going to cost you about the same as getting like a base model digital camera off the Facebook Marketplace. But yeah, it's a worthwhile investment because bad photos kill everything.
You gotta have the good photo.
And, like, that's also taking into account, like, a smartphone is incredibly expensive. A smartphone with a good camera is even more expensive. I know I certainly do not go for the ones that have good cameras because it's so much goddamn money. And instead, trying to grab a digital camera for, like, $30 to $50 is much more my speed. And it saves me from having to make a $700 investment into something I know eventually is going to fly out of my pocket and go flying into a swamp. If that sounds specific, you know why. Yeah, please, please do a good job with the pictures. For lighting, it's usually just fine to take the picture outside if you can.
Outside, sunny day, let's go.
Yeah, you don't really have to spend money on, like, ring lights are great as well. Like I said, just a little selfie light. Or you could just take it outside. Nothing ever beats natural lighting. You can actually also, if you need a neutral background, you can pretty much just spray paint a cardboard box white and you'll have a wonderful little neutral background to set things against. You can have fun with having like a little photo box. You can drape fun fabrics to make something look more decadent, assuming that it's not going to overpower the object itself. So yeah, it's, you know, cheap and fun ways to get your photo set up. Go outside, get a box. It's like being a kid again. You get to have fun with paint. And, you know, a can of spray paint's like $3 at the Walmart.
Take one of those cardboard boxes you got from the other store.
Hey, exactly.
And spray away.
Good advice for any situation. Spray away.
What are some big don'ts for new Etsy sellers?
Yeah, don't buy their ads.
Okay.
It's perfectly fine. You can market your shop on your own time via social media. Just don't buy their ads. Don't pay for advertising in general. Try to pay for advertising as little as you can. I know this is like, I have used the Facebook advertising because it is effective for certain areas. And that's not necessarily because that's like a one-time cost. It can be as cheap as like $3 for a quick boost. Things like that you can consider, but there's so much you can do on your own with social media. Notably, I think for antiques, Pinterest and Instagram are really the hotspots. Although there are a lot of groups on Facebook. Groups on Facebook can get you really far if you are just aggressive enough about marketing yourself there.
Marketing in groups that do not have rules against such marketing.
That are specifically open to marketing, yes. Some of them have certain days where you can self-promote, so, you know, just that's easy enough to follow. There really isn't any need to immediately start making expenses for advertising, especially if you just got started. Like I said, I would take a look at what platforms are kind of specific to your interests. Pinterest is not good for art necessarily, for example, but it is really good for vintage things because more old people are on Pinterest. Yes, I said it. And Instagram being so image heavy is actually pretty good for selling all sorts of stuff. And you do have to get in then to the specific rules of that. Social media, for example, Instagram, you have to be making one post a day to stay relevant on its, what is the word I'm thinking of?
Algorithm?
Algorithms. Twitter is 3 times a day. I don't think Twitter is particularly good for selling things other than yourself, although that is an option. Getting people interested in what you make by getting them interested in you.
I mean, there's not a whole lot that Twitter is good for.
Making yourself really fucking angry.
That's true. However, Instagram is probably more useful for generating sales.
Yeah, Instagram has a really powerful tagging system. They've got pretty easily targetable times. And once a day, I think, is pretty reasonable. I'm with you. All social media requirements suck if you want to, like, get anywhere. But once a day, I find, is the least demanding. Especially considering you can just be, like, 9 angles and every day you post 1 angle of the fucking item. That kind of thing.
There you go.
The tagging system is clear and easy to follow. So I find that it is a really good way to attract interested parties. I don't want to call them customers because that's really weirdly dehumanizing. But people who will like your stuff. And that is worth a lot more than most paid ad campaigns. Although you might want to have some little cheap business cards in your pocket. For example, if you make like jewelry or if you sell vintage jewelry and you have some on and people say, love your necklace, you can add them a card and say, I have more where that came from, baby. But don't say it like that because it'd be weird. Don't use pet names on strangers. Turn yourself into a marketing. I wear the podcast t-shirt all the time and people ask me what it means. Granted, I spend more time around people who like antiques, so they're more interested naturally, but it works.
There you go.
Other things I wish I had known before I got started on Etsy. How much Etsy hates me personally. Okay, yeah. I watch tutorials on how to use Etsy. Their UI sucks and I hate it.
the user interface, the buttons and bits and bobs you have to interact with to get your stuff onto the site.
Yeah, you have to work with your shop, you have to enter like a whole different screen called the shop manager. And at first glance, it looks like it is going to be easy to use, but nothing could be farther from the truth. It is cluttered, it is confusing, and things are scattered everywhere. I often have to Google things to do basic procedures. I wish before I had started that I had maybe watched like a dedicated YouTube series on how to get started on Etsy and how to use their interfacing. For example, I didn't know to go on vacation that was under options with settings. A person who was designing a website that wanted to be used would probably give vacation mode its own button and not put it under options, because like that's not an option. It's like a specific thing I would like to do with my shop, thank you.
A specific task.
Yeah, web analytics is also under options and not stats, which is a page for analytics. I don't fucking understand. I don't know why they built this the way that they built it. Stats can be useful, by the way, just like a side note. They've got that built in. It'll show you like what times people are accessing your shop. I don't use that because I can't be asked. This is not my main job. The shipping really throws me for a loop. That is why I opt to just do my shipping at my local USPS instead of doing anything through Etsy. I don't know, if you're more futuristic than me, then maybe you will not have an issue with this. Just go to your local post office. The people are nicer there.
You did mention a little bit up top, but what makes Etsy better than eBay, in your opinion?
I would say its ability to search tags is more accurate, tends to suffer less from the incredibly strange word keyword salad that happens on eBay. When you type in an item that you want on Etsy, you tend to get items that at least vaguely resemble what you were looking for, unlike eBay. And its marketplace, unlike its shop manager, the user interface for the marketplace is highly picture-oriented, it is uncluttered, and easy to read. I know when I look at an Etsy listing, I know all of where everything is. Where is the shipping box right there? Where is the description right there? Estimated delivery times are like right big there. I think it's just easier to read, and as such, it is just more accessible for more people. eBay's almost become kind of like a specialty thing for people who know how to use eBay. Etsy also pours a lot of time into its SEO, to the point where if you're just Googling things, you will sometimes get Etsy products that are, again, only vaguely related, which is very good for sellers, because it increases the chance that random people will see your object. Yeah, basically just, they took simplicity and actually implemented it.
For me, I think the biggest point for Etsy over eBay is, on eBay, you have to set up an auction listing for a certain number of days, and if it doesn't sell, you have to relist it. Whereas with Etsy, you set one listing for the item and you can just leave it there until someone buys it or you take it down. You can just set it and forget it.
Thank you. I hadn't even considered that. That is a great point. Yeah, Etsy is way more passive than eBay, which, as Ken said, not a bad thing. Incredibly good thing. Very nice.
Very chill.
Yeah, I feel like Etsy somehow is actually more casual than eBay.
It certainly feels that way. Maybe because it doesn't have the whole auction fever energy all over it.
I think it's that, plus eBay has absolutely molded itself into being a sort of like large corporation manufacturing like selling platform, where Etsy has stayed very true to being a small seller sort of interface.
Very much so. You do get some of the big sellers on Etsy, the people who like very clearly have a warehouse or a factory working under them, but you also, it's easier, much, much easier to find the individual craftspeople.
Yeah, that's the thing.
And the individual sellers of small vintage goods.
Lots of individual sellers of small vintage goods. Lots of highly specific shops, which you all know I love more than anything. Very good for following down shopping holes, because their suggested items are very on point for whatever you were just looking at. I have spent a lot of money that way. I will say, if you're shopping for antiques and vintage goods on Etsy, you should be a little... I find that the prices tend to run high. In some circles, we would say more fair. You're more likely to pay a collector price than a resale price, if that makes sense.
Yes. And I think that might also be because eBay people start pricing low because they expect bidding to raise it, whereas on Etsy, they're setting the flat fee that everyone pays.
Exactly. eBay is gameable if you have the time and energy to like watch it like a hawk. Etsy is not interested in that. They are setting a price and you will buy it for that. It's absolutely wonderful for collectors if you already kind of know the range you're going to be paying. For resellers, you know, I still think it's fine because people, no one can know everything about all the things all the time. So you're still going to run into things that you realize are worth more than they're selling it for. You know what? Now when I have to say it like that every time, it feels really bad. I did not intend for that to sound as sketchy as it did. But it's, you know, it's all a part of it. Some people just let things go because they do not feel like doing the time to figure it out.
Yeah.
Want it to sell faster, and they know selling it at a resale price will get it gone faster.
Speaking of getting stuff out of your possession into someone else's possession, my other tip for Etsy sellers is only stock things that you wouldn't be upset to end up living with for possibly the rest of your life.
That's a good idea.
You will be stuck with any unsold merchandise. Do not stock merchandise you do not want to be stuck with.
Yeah, 100%. Ken brings up a great point, because just the other day I tripped over a large clown portrait and I thought, God, I wish I hadn't have bought that.
I feel like it's probably less of a problem for vintage and antique resellers, because usually the people are collectors of the items that they flip.
Yes.
So you can even cycle things in and out of your collection through your Etsy shop.
Yeah, I think that's one of the really fun things about Etsy, is that it can actually just become like a little marketplace for antiques that you love.
Yeah.
And that's why Etsy am so great.
Yes.
The thing is, I wish I'd followed Ken's advice more often, because there's a lot of things in here that if I don't sell them, I'm going to be pretty pissed off. So, don't make my mistake.
Final thoughts on Etsy?
Etsy good.
Etsy good, actually.
Etsy requires less active participation than eBay, but that doesn't mean you can get away with not paying attention to it.
Right on.
Etsy's fun. You should do it.
Yeah. Sources for this episode include Etsy.
Pretty much Etsy, and I will say the Printful FAQ. We'll give Printful its due diligence here.
If you would like to show off your Etsy shop, you can email us directly, antiquesfreakspodcast@gmail.com. You can post in our Facebook group, Antiques Freaks Friends. You can post in our subreddit, r/antiquesfreaks. Or you can tag us on Tumblr, antiquesfreaks.tumblr.com.
If you liked hearing us talk about Etsy and other things and shouting at our cat, consider scrolling down to wherever you're listening to this and leaving us a review. 10 out of 10. I liked when they yelled at the cat.
Speaking of yelling at the cat, if you'd like to listen to deleted scenes, head on over to our Patreon at patreon.com/antiquesfreaks.
Which is where me yelling at the cat would likely to be posted.
Special shout out to our current patrons for paying our hosting fees and filling our hearts with love.
So much love.
And thank you in particular for listening.
That's right, you.
Bye.
Bye.